Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we are diving deep into something pretty complex. Blacklist removal, or IMEI repair, as it's often called.
Right.
We're not just talking about unlocking a phone from a carrier. This is, well, different. It's about changing the device's core status, isn't it?
Exactly. Taking it from that lost or stolen category, which basically bricks it, back to being usable, clean and clear.
So the goal for you listening today is to understand the exact steps needed for this.
That's the mission, yeah. Cut through the jargon. We want to show you the precise step-by-step process. It's like following a digital trail.
And there's specific terminology.
There is. The industry calls it unbarring, but you'll hear other names too, like bad ESN fix, blacklist IMEI repair, or sometimes just IMEI cleaning.
But they all mean the same thing, reversing that negative status.
Essentially, yes, flipping that switch in the central carrier database.
And the sources we looked at emphasize speed and efficiency here, but only if you do it right.
Absolutely. Success really hangs on doing the verification steps in the right sequence. Nail those pre-checks, and most devices can be back online in just a few days.
But if you skip something.
Uh-oh. Yeah, you might as well just start over. It causes delays, rejections. It's critical to be methodical.
Like a forensic audit, you said. Verifying, not guessing.
Precisely. Treat it like that.
Okay, so that brings us to the absolute starting point. Gathering that foundational info, the IAI, the International Mobile Equipment Identity, like a car's VIN number.
Good analogy.
Before you take that digital VIN anywhere, what are the three essential facts you absolutely must have?
Right, three things define the problem up front. First, what is the device? iPhone, Android, maybe a tablet. And second, who was the original carrier? The one it was first activated with?
Crucial.
And third, and this is really the kicker we'll get into, why was it blacklisted? What's the story behind the flag?
What if you only have the IMEI number to start? Can you figure out the device type?
Yes, usually. You'd use an initial technical check. The sources mention things like the T-Mobile device IMEI check as an example.
Just to find out if it's Apple or Android.
Exactly. Its purpose is just to determine the hardware. You absolutely need to know if it's an iPhone versus Android or an iPad. That distinction, well, it dictates the whole path forward.
Okay, so that leads into the next step, carrier discovery. And you're saying the process splits here based on the device type.
It diverges immediately because the underlying tech ecosystems, Apple versus Android, they're structured differently.
How does knowing iPhone versus Android change the roadmap so drastically for finding the carrier?
It really comes down to centralization. With an iPhone, you benefit from Apple's, tighter control.
Right.
The process typically involves a specific tool, often called an Apple iPhone check, maybe through a provider like DirectCodes, the sources mentioned.
And that check does double duty.
It's efficient, yeah. It usually tells you two things at once. The original carrier, T-Mobile, Verizon, whoever, and it confirms the blacklisted status. So one-stop shopping for that initial data dump.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But Android, much more open, more manufacturers, fragmented.
Precisely. So for Android, it's usually a two-step discovery. First, you need a broader service, something like a Samsung network finder, maybe, to pull the basic network info.
Okay.
Then you take those results, that IMEI, and run it through a check specific to the suspected carrier's lost stolen system, like an AT&T lost stolen check, for instance.
So an extra layer of verification because the data isn't all in one neat Apple box.
You got it. It's just not unified in the same way.
But whether it's the one-step iPhone path or the two-step Android one, the principle's the same. You have to know the original carrier before moving on.
It's absolutely non-negotiable, mandatory.
Why? What happens if you guess wrong?
Well, imagine you have a device that started life on Verizon. If you try submitting it to, say, an AT&T repair service,
It just bounces.
instantly rejected because that blacklist flag, it lives on the original carrier's specific records, their ledger. That's why the sources emphasize tools like the Verizon-specific lost stolen check or the AT&T-specific lost stolen check. You have to target the device's administrative home.
Okay, so we've got the device type figured out. We've nailed down the original carrier. Now, this is where you said it gets really interesting.
Yes, this is critical.
Because just knowing that it's blacklisted isn't enough. We need the reason, the why.
This is the crux of it, the administrative puzzle we need to solve. You have to run the original carrier's specific lost stolen unpaid check.
So if our initial check showed, say, T-Mobile.
Then you need the T-Mobile lost stolen unpaid check, or whatever their equivalent is called. You need to find out precisely what triggered that blacklist.
Like a diagnosis. You know they're sick, but you need the specific test result.
Perfect analogy. You know it's flagged, but was it reported lost by the owner? Was it part of an unpaid bill? Was it an insurance claim? The reason is everything.
And the results you get back, they make a huge difference. It's not just lost, stolen.
Huge difference. This is the key insight from the sources, really. The distinction can be incredibly specific. Some blacklist repair services only handle devices reported stolen through insurance.
Meaning a formal claim was filed, money paid out.
Right. A financial event occurred, there's a paper trail tied to an insurance payout, but other services might only deal with devices reported lost or stolen directly by the customer to the carrier.
Maybe they just misplaced it, reported it, then found it. Or a simple mistake.
Could be. Or maybe it was genuinely stolen and they reported it. The point is, the reporting channel insurance versus customer creates two different administrative situations.
Even though the end result for the user is the same, a phone that doesn't work.
Exactly the same result, but a totally different bureaucratic origin.
So the servers that do the unbarring, they actually care how it got blacklisted.
They absolutely do. The financial tracking for an insurance claim is fundamentally different from the flag set by a customer service rep just taking a report.
And if you mix them up, send an insurance-flagged phone to the wrong service.
Guaranteed failure. Immediate rejection. The repair servers are specialized. They check the reason code, essentially, before they even attempt the repair.
Wow. So messing this up isn't just annoying. It's a real waste of time and potentially money.
Absolutely. You submit the IMEI, pay a fee perhaps, wait, only to get rejected. Then you're back to square one, needing to figure out the actual specific reason. It can add days, even weeks, to the process.
So getting that why absolutely nailed down is paramount. No guesswork.
Get as much specific information as you possibly can. That's the only way to ensure you're heading down the right path.
Okay. Detective work complete. We have the device type, the original carrier, and the very specific reason it was blacklisted. Now what? How do we actually fix it?
Now we move to the final action, matching the status to the repair service.
Finding the how now that we have the why.
Exactly. You basically go shopping, you look through lists of these unlock servers, they function like specialized digital repair shops.
And you're looking for?
You're looking for the specific unbarring service that explicitly says it handles the exact blacklist reason you uncovered.
So no general practitioners here. We need a specialist surgeon for this specific digital ailment.
That's a great way to put it. These servers are definitely not one size fits all. The sources gave some good examples for T-Mobile.
Yeah.
Like, if your T-Mobile phone was reported lost or stolen by the customer, you'd look for services offered by specific providers, maybe GSM and Lock USA or Direct Codes, who handle that specific scenario.
Okay. But if that same T-Mobile phone was blacklisted because of an insurance claim,
then those services would likely reject it. You'd need to find a different server, maybe one like phone style server mentioned in the sources, because they specialize in reversing those insurance related flags.
The level of specialization is pretty incredible.
It is. And that's the key operational reality here. And to make it even more challenging.
Oh, right.
The services available on these servers, they change constantly based on availability, based on what the providers behind them can actually process at that moment.
That sounds incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
You can't just rely on instructions you found 6 months ago.
Definitely not. The practical advice from the sources is that you might literally need to check each and every unlock server that seems relevant once you know your specific status reason to find the currently active correct match.
Wow.
And again, the warning stands. If the details you submit the IMEI and the reason don't perfectly align with what that specific service requires, rejection is almost guaranteed.
Which really underscores why this deep dive matters, right?
Yeah.
The complexity itself shows why you need this detailed knowledge. You can't just use a generic checker and hope for the best.
You really can't. Being methodical, doing that pre-verification, it's the only way to be efficient and actually get the device moved from that blacklist back into good standing.
So to wrap that part up, successful IMEI cleaning or unbarring, it's less about just finding any service.
Much less. It's far more about that detailed mandatory pre-check, making sure the specific reason you found matches the specific service you choose.
That perfect alignment is the key.
It's the only reliable path to getting that device fully restored and working again.
You know, what really stands out to me is that sheer level of specialization you mentioned.
Yeah.
The source material talked about providers constantly adding new instructions, potentially for hundreds of different services.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What does that incredible variety tell us about just how many ways a device can end up blacklisted.
It's a great point. The fact that this niche industry needs hundreds of distinct, constantly shifting repair options, each one designed to fix a slightly different bureaucratic or financial error.
Right.
It suggests a truly colossal, almost invisible administrative system underpinning the entire mobile world, just to keep track of device status, handle errors, process claims.
An entire sub-economy built just on reversing these very specific digital flags.
Exactly. It's this complex, constantly moving network ensuring devices stay clean and clear or fixing them when they don't. Quite something to think about.
An invisible, complex, and constantly shifting network.
Well, thank you for walking us through that maze. This has been fascinating.
My pleasure. It's definitely a complex topic.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.